Everybody wants to have purpose and have some meaning to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. We don't wake up wanting to go in and just do a job and get paid to do a job. We'd like to have an effect and know that we're adding value to the world. And it's even more important for the Generation Y and Gen Z.
Hey friends, we're back with more Future Proof. We never really go away, do we? We just take week-long naps from time to time. But nap time is over. Time for another one. I'm your host, Bill Sheridan, and we've got another good one for you. We're talking about strategic planning and critical thinking today, or planning strategically and thinking critically, or critical strategy and planning to think, or whatever you call it. It's all about looking ahead today, mapping a road to the future, and then figuring out how to get there. And here to help us make sense of all this is my guest today, Jennifer Elder. She is a thought leader with the Business Learning Institute, who works with companies to find creative solutions to their most challenging problems. And wow, what a resume. A CPA practice advisor named her one of the top 25 women in accounting in 2018. She's been named Outstanding Educator by the AICPA 5 times. The AICPA and the MACPA named her a woman to watch in 2015. Relevant to our conversation today, she also helps financial leaders become more strategic, staying ahead of the competition and becoming more successful. And she has some fantastic insights into this notion of building a vision and executing on it, right? Where to start, the key components of a strategic plan, possible landmines that you'll want to look out for, and what to do once the plan is complete. And here's a hint, don't just throw it on a bookshelf where no one's going to look at it ever again. We'll get to my conversation with Jennifer in just a minute. First, a quick note to tell you that this week's episode is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. We also offer customized strategic planning services using the acclaimed Insight to Action or I2A process, and we'll teach you how to execute on that strategy using the renowned EOS system, because let's face it, right? Vision without traction is hallucination. Find out more about the Business Learning Institute and how it can help you by visiting blionline.org. Now, that idea of traction, of actually executing on your vision, it's hugely important. I mean, how do you execute on that strategy? I'm of the opinion that you can't just do it in the C-suite. You need everybody's help on this, right? Everyone in the building needs to see what you see and get excited about the same vision that you see, and to understand how what they do drives the organization toward that vision. Right? There's a motivating thing here. And Jennifer and I spend some time talking about this, but if everyone on your team is connected to your strategy and understands that what they do helps you move closer to that vision, they're more likely to be engaged in their work. I mean, you've probably heard this story before, right? It's a story of the janitor at NASA. As the legend has it, John F. Kennedy was touring the NASA facilities for the first time in 1962 when he saw a janitor carrying a broom. And he walked up to the janitor and asked what he was doing. And the janitor said to him, he said, "Mr. President, I'm helping to put a man on the moon." Now, that is an employee with a purpose. If you can help your people get that excited about your vision, you'll move mountains, people. And still, this whole conversation, it's about more than just creating vision and executing on it. It's about adopting a new mindset, really, of looking forward. And we've said it before here, but that's not really built into our DNA. This profession was built to look backward, to account for things that have already happened. And looking ahead isn't something we're taught how to do in school. And it's really not something we've traditionally been required to do at work either. But that's starting to change, especially given how fast things are moving these days. So a real important conversation to be having right now, and I'm honored to be having it with a true thought leader and a friend. Here is Jennifer Elder. So Jennifer, thanks for being here. Your outline for the session starts out with this. It says, according to a 2011 Deloitte survey, strategy setting has doubled in importance for CFOs, and yet 75% of those CFOs say their staffs need training to perform in a more strategic role. So I guess my question is, what's missing? Where are these folks falling short?
Well, it may be a slightly dated study. The facts are still relevant. For CEOs and CFOs, they say the number one skill they're looking for is strategy. But that's not taught in a finance degree. So the real missing element here is forward thinking. Mm-hmm. Looking to the future. And typically in the finance department and in your accounting degree, you're taught to look to the past, to complete financial statements, and they're all historical. But the insights that CEOs need are, what is this telling you about the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As much as I need to know where I've been, it's really more important to know where I'm going.
And that's for a lot of accounting and finance pros, that's a really difficult transition to make, it seems like.
I think it's made more difficult than it really needs to be. There's a simple thing that finance people can do to get an idea of what really is coming down the pike. And it does not involve breaking out a crystal ball. Have a crystal ball. I haven't been able to figure out how to make it work. But what I have been able to do to get an idea of what is coming down the pike is to take my historical information and graph it, put it into a chart over time. And the direction that your chart is going is telling you the direction your organization is going in. So a very simple chart that I love to do is to take three numbers, and it's very simple. Just take sales, your gross profit, and your net income, and chart the three of those on the very same chart over the longest period of time that you can put together.
Okay.
And the direction the line is going is the direction your organization is going. And then that gives you the information as to whether you like the direction it's going in, or do we need to make some changes?
Right, right. And that could very well be will tell you exactly what changes you might need to make, or at least give you an idea of where to start.
It'll give you an idea of where to start. That's why I like those three numbers on the chart, the sales, gross profit, and net income. Because depending upon which of the lines I don't like, I now know where to look. If my net income is good, but my sales are going down, I know I have to work on developing more sales. If sales is going up, but my gross profit is dropping, then I know I have some issues in the costing and production of my products or services. And down below, if the net income number's not good, then I know I have some issues with overhead and sales, general and administrative expenses. So it'll give you an idea of where to look.
So you've taken that first step. You're kind of seeing where things are trending and what might happen down the road. What would be some components that make up a really good strategic plan? How do you start building out, you know, what steps you're going to take?
Good strategic plan. Now, this is something that we used to do on a regular basis. And then almost every entity starts with a strategic plan. It's part of the startup process, and it's part of getting financing when you first start a business. But once you get up and running and going, we tend to drop off. We don't do the strategic plan anymore. At best, we do a one-year budget. Mm-hmm. So what smart businesses need to get back to thinking about the future, because if you don't plan where you want to go, you're just going to end up somewhere. So right. Again, as a startup, we planned where we wanted to go. We knew exactly the goal we wanted to hit. Organizations need to do that. And some do. They have strategic planning, and often it involves their C-suite, their CEO, the CFO, the COO, maybe your CMO, all go off-site, and they do planning. And then they come back, and planning becomes like going to Vegas. What happens at planning stays in planning. Yeah. We don't tell anybody about it. It's just they come back and they say, oh, we're all excited. We have these great things we're planning on doing. But if I told you, I'd have to kill you. And then we wonder why we don't achieve these goals. So the first step in being strategic is really to start with that C-suite, let them figure out the direction they want the organization to go with. And then it has to be communicated to the department heads. So they can then figure out how to operate their department in a way that moves the ship forward.
Right.
From there, the department heads also have to stop being secretive, and they need to tell their employees what are the goals for the department and how the employees can help move the organization forward. And that way, if you connect the dots all the way from the lowest level employee to managers, to senior managers, to VPs, to execs, to the C-suite, you're going to have one seriously efficient, profitable, successful business.
Yeah, that's I think, an aspect of this stuff that's frequently overlooked is how powerful it can be to have everybody in the organization seeing the same thing that you're seeing and understanding what their role is in moving the organization in that direction. I think, it does a couple of things. It's a great way to get people energized, engaged in what they're doing, if they're all working toward a common vision, and B, just understanding their role in how this moves the organization forward. Again, I think it all ties into that employee engagement question in a certain way. What are your thoughts on that?
It absolutely does. And I've been talking for years that the next coming crisis for organizations was going to be with employees. As the baby boomers retire, there aren't enough employees filling in those missing roles. So employee engagement is a huge issue right now for organizations. They're having a hard time finding qualified people, and they're having a hard time retaining them. Now, one of the things that pretty much everybody wants, it doesn't matter what generation you're in, everybody wants to have purpose and have some meaning to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. We don't wake up wanting to go in and just do a job and get paid to do a job. We'd like to have an effect and know that we're adding value to the world. And it's even more important for the Generation Y and Gen Z. They do want to have a positive effect on the world. So if you can explain to them how the simplest job in the organization really helps move the organization forward, you will connect with those employees on a value basis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you connect on the values, they are going to love working for you. They will more likely stay with you than go somewhere else that's offering them more money if you're giving them meaning and purpose.
Yeah, those funny how those values keep popping up and gaining in importance over time. I mean, it seems like core values and things like purpose are more powerful and more important notions than ever before.
Absolutely. And Harvard did a study of their MBA students and found that, and this wasn't theory, this was actual reality. The students would take a job with a company that match their values in lieu of getting an extra $14,000.
Wow.
So it has a huge effect. Mm-hmm. They want to connect on the values. They want meaning.
Yep. And oh, by the way, making that connection, helping them understand how they add to the company's vision, it's good for the organization as well.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it amazes me that more companies they seem to think that employees just get it. Mm-hmm. So the janitor understands how they're moving the organization forward. No, they don't. We need to explain it and say why you're important, why you're adding value, and how you're helping the organization move forward. Another benefit of doing that is if everybody's on the same page, as you mentioned, they're all pulling in the same direction. Yeah. But the other benefit is you'll start to get more ideas of your employees because they know what you're trying to achieve. So now they can help you mm-hmm. with achieving those goals. So many organizations, they just don't pay attention to all the intelligence and wisdom their employees have, or the employees hold on to that wisdom because they don't think their company wants to hear it.
Right.
So if you make that connection and say, this is where we're going. So the Business Learning Institute is trying to provide the highest level of engagement for learners on the primarily on success skills. Every one of the people who works for them understands that that's where they're trying to go. So that means all the employees plus all the vendors are all coming up with ideas to keep that process moving forward. Okay. So the engagement is all the way around and ultimately just benefits the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great stuff. What would you say are some of the common risks inherent in building and executing on a strategic plan or I mean, what kind of landmines should organizations watch out for?
Well, the first landmine is failing to plan is planning to fail. So if you don't do something, so I've had people tell me our organization doesn't do strategic planning. My answer to that would be, yes, they do. They just do it really badly. So the first thing is not doing it. The second issue is sometimes people feel that strategic planning needs to be the production of a 50-page document. No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to be this overwhelming concept. I think my favorite strategic plans can be put on one page mm-hmm. so that people can post it and know exactly what's going on. So I think one of the landmines is trying to make it a bigger deal than it really needs to be. And if you produce a 50-page document, no one will read it.
Right. Those are the plans that go up on the bookshelf and just gather dust and nobody ever looks at it ever again.
Exactly. And that leads into the second landmine, which would be if you do it and never look at it again. The strategic plan is a living, breathing document and it needs to be amended as the world changes.
Yep. Yep.
So letting it sit on the shelf, I like to, with organizations that I work with, I tell them you need to break out that strategic plan at least once a quarter mm-hmm. and evaluate, is it still valid? Is the direction we thought we were going, is that still working? Number two, what progress have we made? Success breeds success. And we all like to feel like we're making progress. That's why, you know, fundraising campaigns always have those thermometers to see. Yeah.
Right.
What you're doing. So the organization can measure their progress along that strategic plan. Another landmine that I think people miss is to think that once they've prepared a strategic plan, you're only ever going to do what's in there. And mm-hmm. again, none of us has a crystal ball that works, so we can't see what's coming down the pike necessarily. So I think every strategic plan needs to have an opportunities line in it. Now, that's not the same as having miscellaneous, mm-hmm. which in most budgets is that's where we, you know, make up stuff that we missed.
Right.
An opportunities budget should be for something you didn't see coming, and I'd like to explore it this year, mm-hmm. not wait until next year. Mm-hmm. And too many people say, no, we've already done our plan for the year. We've got the budget in place. You know, we're out. No, we need to be able to hop on those opportunities when we see them. You know, when a big wave is coming our way, you want to be able to surf with it, not get rolled over by it.
Right, right. So it's almost as if, you know, once you've done a strategic plan, once you've put in the hard work to do that, as you said, at a regular basis, you have to readjust, make corrections, course corrections on where you're going. You know, and it strikes me that every quarter or at least every year or so, you may want to go back and say, okay, well, if this is our plan, what do we need to accomplish this year in order to make sure that we're still on track toward hitting that? I heard somebody use the analogy that it's like when you're down in the weeds executing, it's like cutting a path through a forest. You know, everyone's chopping down trees and getting where they need to go, but every now and then you got to climb the trees and make sure you're cutting that path in a straight line, right?
Exactly. You don't want to be cutting a path in a circle.
Right.
Another thing I think a landmine that people run across is the presumption that everything will go according to plan. And I think it's important for organizations to first think about the things that would get in the way of you achieving your plan. What are the things that could go wrong? And then how can you protect yourself against those things happening? And then a second thing is, particularly if you're starting a new initiative, is what's the pull the plug time? When do you stop throwing good money after bad and saying, okay, we started this initiative, but it's not working?
Yep.
Too many organizations will get into the endowment effect. Once you have bought something or started something, you feel that it has more value than it really does. And it's really hard to let go.
Yeah. You've made that investment and you can't, I mean, you feel obligated to see it through, right?
Yes. And I mean, think about, we all have experienced the endowment effect. If you've ever had a yard sale and someone comes up and says, hey, I'll give you $5 for that exercise machine. All of a sudden you go running to that exercise machine and you start petting it, going, no, do you know how much I paid for this?
Right, right.
It doesn't matter. If you're not using it, it has no value. Stop. Right. Yeah. Stop throwing good money after bad and learn, you know, failure is not in the falling down.
Right.
Failure is in not getting back up. So there's no downside to saying this did not work as long as you learn from it.
Right, right.
And one of the best examples I ever heard from somebody was a CFO in the Midwest had piloted a project to a CEO and just was over the moon about how successful this would be. After 6 months, they had lost $3 million on it.
Wow.
And he went to his CEO and he said, I screwed up. Before you fire me, here's my letter of resignation. And the CEO looked at him, grabbed the letter of resignation, and tore it in pieces. And he said, why would I fire you? I just invested $3 million into your education. Now go use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it.
I think that's another part that organizations need to realize is that innovation and creativity involves failure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how much can you fail before losing your job?
Right. Just apply what you've learned so that you don't make the same mistake again. Right, exactly. a lot of this goes back to the notion that, and I've heard this before, particularly from our good friend, Peter Margaritis, that accounting and finance pros have to start sharpening their storytelling skills. I mean, not just crunching numbers, but analyzing them in a way that shows everyone the picture of what's happening and moves the business forward. I mean, would you agree?
Absolutely. I think the accounting and finance department is fabulous at analyzing data and preparing reports. And then they spit it out to people. And the problem is numbers is a foreign language to a lot of people and they're frightened by it. So you send them this report and that they look at it and it starts swimming in front of them like it's written in Chinese or Cyrillic. And nobody wants to look stupid,
right,
particularly when you're producing reports and giving them to VPs or department heads. They're not going to raise their hand and say, I don't get any of this.
Right.
They're just going to take it and circular file it. So one of the things I recommend that people do to find out whether your report in your information is valuable to people is to prepare your report and then don't send it and see who notices. Who calls you and says, hey, where's that report? They're the ones who see value in it. The others don't. Mm-hmm. And now you have an opportunity to have a conversation with them about what they would value, what is useful to them.
Yep.
And I have a 5-word phrase that I think summarizes what the story is behind numbers and how you can make this connection with other people. Is 5 words. It's what, so what, now what. Mm-hmm. Typically, the finance department prepares the what. It's numbers. And we put them in a table and we hand it out. We need to go to that next step, which is so what. Why should I care? Mm-hmm. What's relevant about this? And I was giving a presentation at a Fortune 500, and I started going through this, and the CFO said, exactly. Said, I'm the CFO of a $15 billion company. I don't care about $15,000.
Right.
That's not a so what to me. It's a so what to someone, but not me as the CFO. So we have to put it in context that has meaning for the user. And then the final part of it is now what? Now what do I do based on this information? Do I keep doing the same thing I'm doing, or do I have to change things? Present the information in a way that informs the user's decision making.
Yep.
Tell, make it so it helps them do their job. We should be a partner with people in our organizations. And unfortunately, too often we are the principal. We do budget to variance analysis, budget to actual variances, and we always point out what somebody's done wrong. No wonder they don't like to see us coming. We're about to hit them over the head with a stick. But if you shift it into, hey, here's a report that will help you do your job better, oh, they're going to love to see you come visit them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think if people remember, to me, that really is strategic reporting, is what, so what, now what.
That's a great way of looking at it, and easy to remember too. Beyond the first step that you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, which is that kind of historical graphing of key metrics and where they might end up going down the road. Beyond that, what would be, in your mind, a logical first step toward building a really successful strategic plan? Where do you really start the ball rolling?
For me, the traditional way of doing a strategic plan is you start with where you are now and say, where do I want to be in 1, 3 to 5 years? I find that limiting. Mm-hmm. Because it means I've got to start with where I am. So I like to use an approach that's called backcasting. And it was started being used in the environmental field to help organizations achieve their environmental goals. But it has such a powerful effect in the planning of an organization. It's wonderful. And the reason I like it is it starts by saying, no holds barred. Where do we want to be in the future? And by future, we mean 10, 25, 50, 100 years out. You just brainstorm the perfect future. Then we're going to go back, identify where we are now. Then the middle is gap analysis. Mm-hmm. How do we get from where I am to where I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
The reason I love this approach is that once you've done it once, you have this constant moving target. So a problem with some strategic plans is when we get it down to 1 year. If we achieve a goal, okay, we're out, we're done. We'll wait until we do our next planning. But if you have this really long-term 50-year set of goals, you can keep moving forward to it and just revisit once a year to see how we're doing and how we're making progress.
Just keep moving those goalposts down the field, right? I mean, just new goals every year to get you where you need to be.
Exactly. And to give you an idea of how successful it is, out of the environmental field, the resort Whistler Blackcomb had set 25-year goals for their environmental desires, zero carbon footprint, zero waste, et cetera. They thought it would take them 25 years. It took them 5. Because they kept their eyes on the prize. And also, some of their goals required new technology. But they knew they were waiting for that new technology. So when it came out, they immediately jumped on it versus waiting another year, another 2 years. So it's incredibly powerful and very simple to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Just some really solid insights there, Jennifer. Thank you so much for being here and explaining this. This has been an enlightening conversation and one that I think, you know, far too few organizations are really taking the time to have an honest conversation about this stuff. So thanks for being here and sharing your insights with me.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a pleasure.
That was Jennifer Elder. She's a thought leader with the Business Learning Institute who works with companies to find creative solutions to their most challenging problems. She also helps financial leaders become more strategic, staying ahead of the competition and being more successful. You can find out more about Jennifer at jenniferelder.com and at blionline.org. And speaking of the Business Learning Institute, just a reminder that the BLI is our sponsor this week. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you and your career by visiting blionline.org. That's it, folks. Time for another nap. I will see you next week.